All right.
United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Gary S. Katzman presiding before court number 22-00353, Blue Scope Steel Limited et al. Versus the United States et al. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Excuse me, Daniel Porter of the law firm Curtis on behalf of plaintiff Blue Scope.
James Beatty, also with Curtis, also on behalf of Blue Scope.
Good afternoon.
Michael Haldenstein for the United States.
Andrea Kasten, also with the U.S. International Trade Commission.
Maureen Thorson of Wiley Ryan here today on behalf of the defendant intervener domestic manufacturers.
Good afternoon. Please be seated. So we're here in the case of Blue Scope Steel, et al. Versus United States. I understand that the time has been allocated. You've informed us through the Mr. Goal what the allocations will be. Of course, Blue Scope will be speaking for 20 minutes. And my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the United States International Trade Commission will be speaking for 15, and the Nucor will be speaking for 5. Right. So without further ado, we will begin the arguments. Now, it may be, since we're all gathered here, that after the arguments, the time allocations have been filled. We might have a quick, you know, 2 or 3 minute round of a rebuttal upon a rebuttal. And also, as is my practice, I give the attorney the opportunity to file a post-argument submission of not more than 1,250 words. That would be due, let's see the calendar here. Anyway, we're very high tech here, yeah. Right, so that would be due, by close of business of April 8th. Thank you. Mr. Porter or Mr. Abidi, who's on? Please begin. And again, you know, the court has read all of your filings. This is an opportunity to, including your responses to all arguments, this is an opportunity for you to rebut the responses by opposing counsel. And we have some further questions for you as well in light of the oral argument questions. If you wish, and also to say a few opening words, you may do so.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, this is James Beatty arguing on behalf of Blue Scope and its affiliates, which include domestic producer Northstar. The Court has asked us to focus our remarks on rebutting the responses to the Court's questions provided by opposing counsel. But before I discuss those specifically, I want to take a moment to do some important framing. In the context of five-year reviews, the Commission is charged with determining what is likely to happen, given the record before it. Likely means probable, more likely than not. It does not mean that something is merely possible. We understand the court's concerns that appeals decisions made by the commission can devolve in disputes over evidence, but that is not the case here. Here, the commission's analysis premised on things that are possible but not likely. For example, given the nature of Blue Scope's operations in Australia, it is not likely that Blue Scope could ship more than its commitment to Steelscape to the United States. Yet the commission concluded the opposite. Similarly, it is not likely that BlueScope, upon revocation, would stop producing cold-rolled steel, a value-added product, in order to ship more hot-rolled steel to the United States. That is a position that counsel for the Commission has adopted for this litigation. Each of these aspects of the Commission's position is possible, but they are not likely, and thus do not constitute a lawful determination that is supported by substantial evidence. The Federal Circuit's admonition that the trade court not reweigh evidence is not an instruction not to analyze evidence. The statutory mandate regarding substantial evidence requires a probing review to ensure that the agency, the Commission in this situation, has supported its determination with substantial evidence. With that framing, we turn to BlueScope's rebuttal to the response provided by the Commission. So with respect to Commission Question 1, the Commission responds to the court's query regarding its prior analysis of investment in accumulation analysis. The Commission largely avoided the question while stating that it typically placed this analysis in its likely conditions of competition. The Commission simply restates its high-level reasons for deciding that BlueScope was not different from the other subject producers. The response does not address why this practice exists. The court stated that the purpose of the accumulation analysis is to ensure that injury is not attributed to countries that are not actually causing industry, what the court termed overbroad accumulation in its Newport decision. In order to enlighten that analysis, the Commission examines whether a respondent or group of respondents have a different economic incentive from the other subject producers as a result of its investment in the United States. The underlying logic of the Commission's prior decision was that a commercial entity is unlikely to pursue an export strategy where it competes with itself. Thus, an investment in the United States would cause an exporter to limit its export volumes to ensure that it does not undermine the pricing environment in the United States. In addition, the Commission has considered whether the U.S. entity can veto sales, but that is essentially an extension of the underlying logic that having one foot in both camps ensures that a producer will treat both carefully. The Commission suggests that because BlueScope did not intend to replace imports with domestic production, it was appropriate to conclude that BlueScope would compete in the U.S. market in the same fashion as all of the other subject producers. The Commission has, however, previously declined to accumulate subject producers even where replacement was not occurring. For example, in hot rolled steel, USITC Pub 3956, the Commission declined to accumulate Kazakhstan, Romania, and South Africa almost solely on the basis of its findings regarding a unified sales network, not replacement. That conclusion was based primarily on testimony from company executives, a type of evidence that the Commission chose not to credit in this proceeding. The fact is that an investment of the scale that BlueScope pursued in the United States does change how an entity approaches the market, especially where, as here, the investment results in a U.S. producer with production capacity that is nearly as large as that of the foreign producer entity. Fundamentally, the record showed that BlueScope's economic incentives shifted in the same way as the Commission has previously credited, and its decision here was unsupported as a result. Regarding question two, we note that essentially the same question was posed to both the defendant and defendant intervener, so I've blended the answers to those two questions.
Thank you.
The Commission states that express adoption would lead to more argument. While the domestic interested parties suggest that BlueScope's characterization of its investment as significant robs it of its importance, the express adoption of a standard regarding discretionary accumulation would provide important certainty to participants in the Commission's proceedings. BlueScope does not suggest that a precise quantitative threshold is a relevant benchmark, but the Commission's prior practice on this point provides a useful framework for gauging whether the economic incentives of particular exporters have, in fact, changed as a result of their U.S. investment. As with all Commission decisions, the determination would necessarily be fact-intensive, but the express adoption of the Commission's current practice would serve to focus that fact-finding and avoid the situation we have here, where the Commission has a clear analytical framework which it later disclaims in the context of litigation. Regarding question three,
Mr. Beatty, I want to probe the sort of the quantitative versus qualitative characterizations. And as you know, in your response to the oral argument questions. BlueScope asserted that there is no quantitative threshold between the accumulation inquiry. There's no quantitative threshold because the accumulation inquiry is a comparison of subject producers to each other and over time. The value of the investment was also very high, but the shift in corporate structure demonstrated the importance of that $2.5 billion investment. BlueScope was the only producer to make such a consequential investment during the period. Now, are you suggesting that a qualitative threshold exists?
Yes, Your Honor. Perhaps the veto is one qualitative factor that is clearly part of the Commission's consideration. So, for example, veto authority has appeared in a number, or a discussion of whether veto authority exists has appeared in a number of the Commission's prior decisions, and we note that at the hearing in this case, both Commissioner Johansson and Commissioner Schmidlein directly asked BlueScope about whether Mr. Finan did indeed have this veto authority. But as I said in response to Commission question one, that sort of qualitative aspect is really indicia of that overarching have the economic incentives changed question. Because the fact that a company makes a large investment and changes their corporate structure suggests that they are in fact viewing their exports to the U.S. different than what they did in the investigation or the previous review, and make them distinct from other subject producers, which is really the core of the inquiry, is should we look at BlueScope in this case differently from the others? It's not, accumulation is not just positive about whether they're causing injury or not. It's just whether they are different enough that they should be looked at separately.
So in your analysis, your view is that a practice exists.
Yes, sir.
Does the ITC always condition its accumulation determination on changes to corporate structure?
That is one factor that they have examined in a number of the underlying decisions. They've also obviously examined the size of the investment relative to the market. But I think that it is quite clear that factor specifically, the veto, is part of what the Commission does and asked about in this very proceeding and prior proceedings.
So what is the threshold for consequential investment beyond which a uniform and established procedure exists that would lead a party, in the absence of notification of change, reasonably to expect adherence to the established practice or procedure?
Your Honor, can you, that is a reference to the...
A rancher's cattleman case,
yes.
Yeah.
It is the consistent application of a discrete set of factors to similar facts in a series of administrative determinations, and we think that we have cited five of those quite heavily, and then if you look at our footnote that we referenced in our response, in our reply brief, and both to the court's questions,
Footnote 396.
That's the Commission's footnote. Our footnote citing a series of Commission determinations where they've used this analytical framework to determine whether accumulation based on likely conditions of competition is.
And which footnote is that?
Just
want to make sure that we're on the same page.
Let me pull it up here quickly. This is going to be our reply brief.
Mm-hmm.
On page 7, footnote 1.
Thank you. In And again, sort of this you know, probing regarding the concept of consequential is, you know, taken from the, you know, Blue Scope's view that it was the only producer to make such a consequential investment during the period.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this context, consequential is both a qualitative and quantitative aspect of the investment. It's a large dollar value, certainly large dollar value in the two Blue Scope, which is part of the important framework, and relative to the other producers. But, you know, we're not suggesting that the commission has to say, if you invest $1 billion, you are decumulated. Those other factors that are part of the commission's analysis do enlighten whether the economic incentives have changed, which is really the point of the practice. So changes in the underlying corporate structure, the fact that Steelscape is essentially a captive channel for Blue Scope, these are all things that point to the fact that Blue Scope should be analyzed differently from the other subject producers in this review.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I will turn to question three. Again, question three overlapped between both sides, so we've consolidated the answer here. So a central aspect of Blue Scope's appeal is the Commission's treatment of the relationship between Blue Scope's operations in Australia, its affiliated steel processor Steelscape in Kalama, Washington, and domestic producer Northstar, which is wholly owned by Blue Scope and was the focus of a significant investment during the period. The Commission's premise is that Blue Scope will be free to increase its exports to Steelscape and beyond because Northstar is small relative to other producers and is disinclined to ship to the West Coast. It also finds that all other U.S. producers do not suffer from similar restraints and are readily able to compete for sales to Steelscape and otherwise compete for sales on the West Coast. And it would be possible for Blue Scope that it would be possible for Blue Scope to make if it were able to trade outside of the Steelscape channel. This analytical framework suffers from key flaws that the Commission's response and that of the domestic interested parties does little to rehabilitate. The first and most obvious is that Northstar is a member of the domestic industry with the same logistics options as any other domestic producer. In fact, if you look at the staff report at table I-23, you can see that Northstar is in good company in Ohio and that many of the domestic facilities are much farther east. As a result, the Commission's conclusion that Northstar is somehow at an asymmetric disadvantage for shipping to the West Coast doesn't have support in the record. Either freight to the West Coast is unattractive for everyone in Ohio, or it's not. The Commission cannot apply one analytical framework to Northstar and then assume that other domestic producers don't have those issues. That is internally inconsistent. In fact, the record shows that domestic producers can and do ship to the West Coast, and that includes Northstar. Contrary to the domestic interested party suggestion that Northstar disclaimed any interest in selling to the West Coast, Northstar simply noted the difficulties associated with shipping steel all the way across the country, but noted that it did so during the period. As a result, there is no basis to conclude that Northstar is somehow different in this respect, such that the Commission could apply one set of facts to Northstar and another to the rest of the market.
So on this point of inconsistent statements, the Commission notes that Northstar shares of domestic production and commercial sales also suggest opportunities for Blue Scope to compete for sales in the U.S. market without jeopardizing sales by Northstar. And so you attribute to the Commission the statement that Blue Scope would have no incentive not to ship everywhere in the United States. Can you explain the connection between the Commission's statement and your paraphrase?
Yes, Your Honor. The Commission's view of Blue Scope's ability to ship to the United States generally is that Steelscape is essentially not a captive channel, irrespective of the supplier agreement, and that Blue Scope, as it did in the investigation, could ship to anywhere in the United States. So that is how we viewed the Commission's statement, is that essentially Blue Scope's Australia operations were able to ship anywhere in the United States, and implicitly they've concluded that they would if the order were revoked. Now, our position is that the relationship with Steelscape, the complete lack of export orientation by BlueScope, which is borne out heavily in the staff report with export shipments being, without discussing proprietary information, being a extremely limited share of BlueScope's total shipments during the period, especially towards the end. And the controls of the supply agreement itself, it makes the idea that BlueScope is going to ship to anywhere in the market now, especially in light of the North Star investment, unlikely.
Thank you.
And I'll just continue here. I think I'm overlapping a little bit with what I just said. Notably, the Commission's response says at a minimum there would be an opportunity for BlueScope to compete for sales on the West Coast that are not of interest to its affiliate North Star. However, the Commission determined that that this is a possibility, which is inconsistent with the court's ruling in Wieland that the Commission needs to focus on things that are likely, not just possible. Another important aspect of this issue is the likely shipments to Steelscape. The best discussion of the issue, just to summarize here, I would point you to pages 15 to 21 of our reply brief. That's a very detailed discussion of the proprietary aspects of the supply agreement and sort of more of the confidential data about what BlueScope's actual excess capacity is and how that relates to the supply agreement. So if read correctly, the Commission could not conclude that BlueScope would ship hot rolled steel to the United States outside of the Steelscape channel. Simply is not excess capacity due to so, or evidence that BlueScope was export-oriented at all. And we direct the court's attention to table IV-13 in the staff report. If you look at the numbers in the table, you can see, as I mentioned, towards the end of the period, the North Star investment was reaching its peak. Exports from Australia were extremely limited, and that's anywhere in the world. But if you read the views, you get a completely different flavor from the Commission's conception of Australia's export propensity. In the views, the Commission takes the position, as we stated, that BlueScope will do an immediate about-face upon revocation, discard its focus on the home market, abandon its cold rolling assets in Australia, and ship as much hot rolled as it can. That is an internal consistency, and that requires a remand for further explanation. And then we'll sort of loop back to the beginning of the questions to the domestic interest party. You asked them one question that was not asked to the Commission. The court posed a question regarding whether the Commission's citation to NSP's planned investment was sufficient to support its conclusion. As we argued, Exhibit 10, which is the evidence, Exhibit 10 to NSP's brief, which is the evidence that the Commission is relying on, doesn't support the premise that that planned investment is similar to what North Star was doing during the period, and the Commission has previously rejected the premise that nascent investments do cause the kind of economic incentive shift that has typically driven its likely conditions of competition analysis in the context of investment. And it would point you to the PET resin decision that the court made in that respect.
Now, in PET resin, the ITC noted specific uncertainties pertaining to specific nascent investment. And this also relates to Nippon Steel, which I want to ask you about, and I'll give you a few more seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So the investment by Nippon Steel was a completed investment in a plant facility. How does that compare with the nascent investment considered in PET resin?
Your Honor, if you'll indulge me, I have the exhibit right here that we're talking about. So, yes, there had been a previous corporate consolidation, but during the period, this is the press release that the Commission pointed to for evidence about this, and it says, the EAF is scheduled to start its operation in the first half of 2023. The newly built EAF will be able to manufacture slabs necessary to produce steel sheet products and further improve its competitiveness. So that is an investment that is not making subject merchandise that isn't going to happen during the period. So that is fundamentally distinct from what was done at North Star, and you know, Commissioner Carpell actually visited the facility, and there is a detailed report of the ITC's visit in the record. And it's a fundamentally different facility that was actually operational during a period, and as we've stated throughout, changed the way that BlueScope competed in the U.S. market.
And finally, probing a bit more on Nippon Steel. BlueScope said, regarding the ITC's reference to Nippon Steel's planned U.S. investment, which BlueScope argues constitutes the only comparison between BlueScope's operations and those of another subject producer, and an insufficient comparison at that. And this relates again to the your view on the commission's a nascent investment analysis. Why was it improper or insufficient for the ITC to compare BlueScope's U.S. investments with Nippon Steel's planned investment for the purpose of analyzing likely conditions of competition between the period of investigation?
Your Honor, we think that the import of the PET resin case is that the Commission's view on planned investments, regardless of size, do not have the kind of impact on the economic incentives that underlie accumulation analysis. That's why they discounted the planned investment of the respondent in the PET resin case. They said, essentially, we don't know that this is going to happen, and thus we can't make a determination regarding whether this producer is likely to compete differently in the future, which is the locus of the review.
Thank you.
See, my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. I will provide counsel for the defendant and defendant intervener who are splitting their time with three extra minutes if you need it, because I did provide counsel for the plaintiffs with three extra minutes. No, Mr. Haldenstein.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. In accumulating subject imports from Australia, the Commission found the statutory requisites were satisfied, found there was not likely to be no discernible adverse impact upon revocation, and then it found there was likely to be a reasonable overlap of competition among the imports in the different subject countries. In deciding whether to exercise its discretion and accumulate subject imports from Australia, the Commission followed its typical approach of considering likely differences in conditions of competition between the imports in the different subject countries. It's the same basic approach the Commission followed in Colgold Steel, the other Commission sunset reviews, Your Honor, recently considered in the Cleveland-Cliffs case. The Commission considered BlueScope's arguments, but found imports from Australia were not likely to compete under different conditions of competition. The Commission rejected BlueScope's arguments that its investment in North Star meant that it would no longer sell to unaffiliated customers. The Commission pointed out that BlueScope's relationship with North Star was not a new condition of competition at all. BlueScope fully acquired North Star in 2015 during the original period of investigation. The Commission also highlighted what happened in the original investigation before the anti-dumping order was imposed. BlueScope rapidly increased its sales to the United States during the original investigation, and BlueScope increasingly sold to customers other than Steelscape on the West Coast. This is in the Commission's confidential views at pages 40 to 41. The sales to unaffiliated customers occurred before and after BlueScope fully acquired Northstar in October of 2015. We discussed this in our brief at pages 39 to 40. Now, BlueScope has just argued that it was not likely that BlueScope would ship to unaffiliated customers, and that the Commission only found that it was possible. The Commission relied on what occurred during the original investigation before the order was in place, and that's a consideration the Statement of Administrative Action instructs the Commission to look to. The Commission also relied on BlueScope's statement, and there's some confidential information on page 39 of the Commission's views and footnote 156 about what BlueScope was likely to do. The Commission therefore found that if the order was revoked, BlueScope was again likely to sell to unaffiliated customers as it did in the original investigation. The Commission also addressed this issue of Nippon Steel. It was also an owner of Steelscape and was selling to Steelscape. It had a supply agreement with Steelscape as well. And the Japanese made the same argument to the Commission about supplying Steelscape in order to protect their investment in the domestic producer. And the Commission addresses this in footnote 205. With respect to that investment that Council of BlueScope was just discussing, it's not accurate that the investment had not been made. There was a lot more information on the record than what BlueScope referenced. For example, on page 3-3 of the staff report, there's a discussion of the investment, and it indicates that the ground had already been broken in early 2021, and that the agreement had been signed in 2020. So it's not accurate to say that the investment had not been made. They were already constructing the new facility. With respect to this argument about Northstar's shipments to the West Coast, Your Honor, they told the Commission they didn't like to supply Steelscape. The freight was just too expensive. There was testimony to that effect that the Commission cited. Their plan was to supply Steelscape from Australia. So in a sense, as counsel indicated, they had been supplying Steelscape from Northstar, the domestic producer. Their plan was to switch to subject imports. So in that sense, it's the exact opposite of what occurred in large residential washers and with stainless steel plate. It wasn't a local supply strategy. It wasn't moving production from overseas to the United States. It was the opposite. It was going to supply the Steelscape was through the use of subject imports instead of domestic production. In terms of the logistics, we don't know what the logistics for Northstar were. All we know is that they said that they didn't want to continue supplying Steelscape with their production, and then it was cheaper to do it from overseas, from BlueScope. The record also showed that other domestic producers were supplying were supplying Steelscape on the West Coast. And there were domestic producers on the West Coast that could also supply Steelscape. So the logistics certainly were not the same for all domestic producers. They had different locations, presumably different access to rail, and it would have different costs shipping to Steelscape. With respect to the switching from cold rolled to the hot roll, that's exactly what BlueScope said they were planning to do. This wasn't something that we came up with on in our brief. They had indicated that was their plan because they wanted to, Steelscape wanted to use hot rolled steel instead of cold rolled steel. And so they were going to switch from supplying cold rolled steel to hot rolled steel. With respect to the testimony that was referenced by BlueScope from Mr. Finan, there was testimony that indicated they were interested in supplying Steelscape. And he did say that, and as counsel noted, they were asked for more information to be provided post-hearing. And that information was provided by BlueScope in the post-hearing brief. That the answer to Commissioner Schmidtline's question about vetoing of imports is at page 308 of the public appendix. When you look at that answer, there's no indication that they're going to veto imports that go to other unaffiliated customers. They did not indicate that at all. And they also submitted a sworn declaration from the witness. And it didn't indicate they weren't going to ship to unaffiliated customers. Instead, a sworn declaration, that's public, and it's at page 330 of the public appendix, it says he's only going to veto exports to the United States that will hurt their overall objectives in the market. Now, to me, that could mean their profitability in the U.S. market overall. So it's not clear at all that there's a commitment there to not sell to unaffiliated customers. Also, in the hearing transcript, all BlueScope says is that with respect to the vetoing of exports to the United States to the merchant market is that there's not going to be substantial exports to the merchant market. But they didn't say they weren't going to ship to the merchant market, and that's at the bottom of public appendix page 290. You can see the statement that they're saying there's not going to be substantial shipments, not that there won't be any shipments. With respect to the supply agreement, BlueScope has misconstrued the supply agreement and changed their position. They told the commission it was a cap on the purchases by Steelscape of a certain amount of a certain volume of hot rolled steel, and that's what Jody Shook's declaration indicated. Now they're saying that's basically the minimum they can ship. They have to ship. They're required to ship that amount to the United States to Steelscape, but that's not what they told the commission. They were saying that they were going to ship to the commission, ship to Steelscape in comparable amounts to what they've been shipping in terms of cold rolled steel. They were going to switch from cold rolled steel to hot rolled steel in comparable amounts. They never said they had to absolutely first supply Steelscape before selling to unaffiliated customers, and that seems to be their argument now, that they have to supply Steelscape first, and that's not accurate. Another key point, Your Honor, is that in the BlueScope's reply brief, they say there's nothing on the record about selling to unaffiliated customers. Well, that's at page 18 of their reply brief. That's just not accurate, Your Honor. Commission found that there were increasing sales to unaffiliated customers during the original investigation. And this was under the same supply agreement that is currently in effect. They were increasing their sales to unaffiliated customers. This supply agreement argument is really has no basis in the record. They're under the same supply agreement they were under back in the original investigation when they're increasing their shipments to other customers. We also pointed out in our brief, Your Honor, that two sunset reviews do not show a practice. The court indicated in Allegheny Ludlam that two reviews are just not enough. And even if there were a practice, Your Honor, the commission addressed Blue Scope's argument in detail in footnote 401 about these two earlier reviews. The commission explained that they weren't moving production to the United States. Again, actually, they were doing the opposite. They were moving. They wanted to switch to using imports instead of domestic production. And Blue Scope admitted this much in a response to Commissioner Schmidt-Lein's question on public appendix page 309. And we went through all the other reviews where this argument has been made about domestic investment in domestic production by foreign producers. You know, we discussed polyvinyl alcohol and brass sheet and strip and PET resin and granular resin, all these cases where this argument has been rejected.
Now, in your response to the oral argument questions, you say that the commission has considered investment in domestic production by subject producers in response to arguments that the investment showed differences in likely conditions of competition among subject imports. Now, is that also a way of saying that there is a practice?
We have a practice of responding to arguments. That would be the practice, Your Honor, but not always considering that as a factor. Absolutely not. In fact, it's unusual, and they've only cited two sunset reviews.
Now, Blue Scope's statement is that, quote, regardless of the type of corporate relationship, the commission has consistently focused on whether the U.S. entity has the ability to veto sales. So what I'm trying to sort of understand is why isn't what you've said in the response to your oral argument questions consistent with the idea that there is a practice here?
With respect to the vetoing of the sales, that argument has sometimes been made that they'll use the vetoing of sales to protect the domestic investment. And that is what they argued here. In stainless steel plate, they found that was a consideration, but that was because they were pursuing a local strategy. They were moving production to the United States, and there was the ability to veto those imports coming in. But here the commission found that they could still sell in the United States on the West Coast. They could still export to the West Coast despite any investment in North Star. We also pointed out in our brief, Your Honor, with respect to this massive investment, it was only $770 million, which quite a bit of money, but it's not the $2.5 billion that's cited by Blue Scope. Only $770 million was actually invested in hot rolled steel production capacity during the period of review. That's comparable to the Nippon investment of $775 million that I referenced and we discussed in our brief.
So with respect to Nippon Steel's investment, why should the court conclude that the commission's brief reference in a footnote to Nippon Steel's investment in a planned United States facility constitutes a response to an argument that Blue Scope's investment showed differences in likely conditions of competition among subject imports?
Well, the commission was just noting that they weren't unique in that matter. It did respond to the argument there is an investment at length. It discussed the investment, but it noted that the domestic producer, it would still be, Blue Scope was still at least as important as that domestic producer in terms of size. And it had they basically had the same relationship they did during the original investigation. Blue Scope discussed, you know, the vetoing of exports to the United States, but there was no indication that really anything had changed between those two, between BlueScope and NorthStar, that would indicate they would not compete, at least on the West Coast, for sales to unaffiliated customers. With respect to the likelihood of the exports to the United States, I mean, they readily admitted they were going to export to Steelscape. So that was something they talked about at length. So it wasn't just a possibility that they were going to export to the United States. They said they were going to do it. And the commission found that those should be considered merchant market sales, and explained that in footnote 394 of its views, because domestic producers were competing for those sales, as well as subject producers, Your Honor. Nippon Steel, another subject producer, was selling to Steelscape, and I believe there was another subject producer noted in that footnote. If you don't have any further questions, Your Honor, I think I'm finished.
Well, thank you, Mr. Haldenstein. We'll hear from Ms. Thorson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, I'm Maureen Thorson from Wiley Ryan on behalf of the intervening domestic industry members. I'd like to focus on a couple of aspects of BlueScope's responses to the court's questions and a couple of the things we've heard from Mr. Beatty today. BlueScope, in its responses, repeatedly cites the testimony of Pat Fine and the head of the company's North American operations for the proposition that BlueScope would not supply any U.S. customers beyond Steelscape, and faults the agency for weighing Mr. Fine's testimony less heavily than BlueScope would have liked, as well as for concluding that BlueScope sales to Steelscape would be merchant market sales. But the agency explained why it found that BlueScope would ship meaningful volumes to Steelscape, which it indeed admitted that it would ship to Steelscape. And the agency also provided its reasons for finding it likely that BlueScope would compete for sales to non-Steelscape customers, notwithstanding the executive's alleged veto power. Not only did the commission explain this, as Mr. Haldenstein just explained, the record is a bit more complex regarding Mr. Fine's veto power than BlueScope would have you believe. And for that matter, the commission is entitled as the fact finder to weigh the credibility of the witnesses in front of it, as indicated in Nippon Steel, and that's 458 F3rd, 1345, Federal Circuit, 2006, where the Court of Appeals vacated a decision of this court after finding that the court improperly substituted its own credibility determination for that of the commission. At any rate, the commission was not required to take Mr. Fine's claims at face value, particularly given the economic incentives that BlueScope had to increase U.S. sales that would not be in competition with its affiliated U.S. production. This also isn't the only case in which the commission has made a similar credibility determination. In the first Sunset Review concerning rebar, it's publication 3933 at 19, the commission discounted similar witness testimony to the effect that ArcelorMittal would not ship rebar from Ukraine given its recent acquisition of Border Steel, a U.S. rebar producer, and the commission found, well, but you can do both. You know, Border Steel sells in a very particular part of this market. You can sell from Ukraine to other parts of the U.S. market without in any way harming Border Steel. And that's very much similar in the general fact pattern to what we have here. So when Mr. Beatty says having one foot in both camps means you'll treat both carefully, the commission found, well, you can have a foot in each camp and win both ways by shipping from Australia and continuing to produce in Ohio, and that's very similar to what happened in rebar. I'd also like to address briefly BlueScope's claims that the commission violated an agency practice. Over the course of this case, BlueScope's theory of that practice seems to have shifted somewhat from the commission always accumulating where there has been a substantial U.S. investment, however we define substantial, to the Commission having a practice of assessing the degree to which U.S. investments have changed the country or producers' economic incentives in the U.S. market. As BlueScope frames it in its answers to the court's questions at page 4, the accumulation decision is about whether Australia should be examined separately because Australia has different incentives from the other subject countries. But even if we assume that this characterization accurately reflects the Commission practice or the proper focus of the conditions of competition analysis, the agency did, in fact, evaluate whether Australia had sufficiently unique incentives as to merit accumulation. In doing so, it took into account BlueScope's investments and affiliations and its arguments regarding its corporate organization. Because the Commission performed exactly the analysis that BlueScope asserts was required, this is squarely a substantial evidence challenge. And BlueScope is not persuaded that the only reasonable reading of this record compels separate assessment of Australian imports. Rather, the Commission reasonably weighed the evidence as indicating that BlueScope's incentives regarding U.S. market participation were not distinct enough from those of other subject producers as to merit accumulation.
So on the question of agency practice, you answered in the oral argument questions, response to oral argument questions that, and I'm trying to sort of understand, you know, what is the practice?
Yeah.
To the extent the agency can be said to have any consistent practice regarding subject producers' U.S. investments, it is to assess such investments flexibly.
Yes.
In light of the record as a whole. And then, you know, if we return to the Rancher's Cattlemen case that I asked Mr. Beatty about, does this leave any room for the Commission to adopt an agency practice of any kind in the context of a accumulation determination such that a party could reasonably expect future adherence?
I think it's very difficult under the Rancher's Cattlemen standard. And that's because of the type of analysis the Commission does. It's extremely holistic. It's extremely fact-bound. That's why you have cases that point out repeatedly the sui generis nature of Commission determinations. The Commission certainly has a practice, as Mr. Haldenstein said, of addressing the arguments that people raise. And in the context of arguments about investments in the United States, it will look at those investments, and I think it's reasonable to say they do look at whether incentives have changed and whether those incentives have changed significantly, but there's no formulaic or lockstep approach to making that assessment. Every case is different. As Your Honor's questions pointed out, the different cases that BlueScope has cited involve everything from direct ownership over an affiliated U.S. producer to other types of affiliations, to planned investments, to finished investments, to different types of channels of distribution. There's all kinds of different facts that can come up on these records. And in this, because of how absolutely distinct these records are, you're just not in a situation where you can say always a U.S. investment of X caliber is going to result in accumulation, regardless of what other facts there might be on this record. I can completely understand why BlueScope believes its investment here is significant within the confines of the company's own business operations. But that's not the question that the Commission has been asked. The Commission is whether BlueScope is going to compete in the U.S. market so distinctly as to merit accumulation. Okay. There's all kinds of facts that go into that analysis.
So you also answered that, the Commission never found that West Coast sales do not affect producers in the East.
Yeah.
Or such that producers were unlikely to compete for West Coast sales. Rather, it found that North Star and North Star alone was unlikely to compete for such sales, having disclaimed an interest in doing so. Where and how did North Star disclaim an interest in competing for sales in the Western United States?
Yeah, so I point you to page 40, note 160, of the Commission's views. Some of this is from confidential exhibits, and so it's discussed in the Commission's views where they're tracing that disinterest. And then there's also footnote 395 at page 394,
It elaborates somewhat on the claims that Northstar made regarding domestic producers' ability generally to compete on the West Coast and explains the Commission's disagreement.
And also with respect to Steelscape, you answered that BlueScope also treats Steelscape as if it were the only purchaser of hot rolled steel on the West Coast. But there are West Coast purchasers not affiliated with BlueScope to which BlueScope could increase its shipments in competition with non-Northstar domestic producers. Does the Commission make this argument in their determination, and if so, where?
Yes, I'd point you to the exact same footnotes. It's inherent in the way the Commission discusses the industry and the West Coast participation in those footnotes that there are other purchasers on the West Coast beyond Steelscape.
Thank you.
My time is up, Your Honor.
Right. Thank you, counsel. Well, as promised, there will be the opportunity for a two-minute lightning round. You don't have to take advantage of that. And I 2 minutes for each side. And I see Mr. Porter is jumping up.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. May it please report Dan Porter on behalf of plaintiff of BlueScope. Just a couple of rebuttal points. First, it is our view that defendants' counsel made multiple incorrect statements about the record. And I'll give you one in a second, but in light of this, we're going to request, or with your permission, on request now, that we adjust the deadline for the post-oral argument submission to coincide with receipt of the transcript. So we will make a request for a transcript tomorrow, but I don't know how long that takes. So we would like the deadline to be received transcript by plus 1 week. So that's a request. And just give you an example, defendants' counsel gave the impression that there was no evidence that Northstar's chief executive, Pat Finan, had veto authority. Well, that's completely wrong. The transcript, I'm reading from this transcript now. This is Commissioner Schmittlein. So, you are saying that you have a veto authority over the plans coming out of Australia in terms of the price and volume. Mr. Finan, yes, it has to be endorsed by me. It won't happen without my endorsement. I think that's pretty direct evidence of veto authority, Your Honor. And again, this was a misstatement by counsel for defendant. Moving on, much of defendant's argument, quite bluntly, is putting the cart before the horse. Why? Defendant tried to cite all of this evidence as to why BlueScope's future exports will not be injurious to the domestic industry. But the Commission never went there because they would only go there had they not accumulated, right? As Your Honor very well noted in previous sunset cases, first you decide whether you accumulate, and if you don't accumulate, then you make a second separate decision about whether those exports are going to be injurious. So going on and on about something that the Commission itself did not do. Next. Vis-a-vis Nippon Steel, Your Honor, the Commission has repeatedly said a future activity is not the same as hardcore assets. On the record, in this review, you have photos of BlueScope's expansion, all of the equipment, all the machinery that BlueScope put in there and that was actually producing steel at the time of the hearing. Very different than a press release. It was the only thing that the Commission cites, a press release saying that something might happen in the future. Very different. And lastly, Your Honor, just a quick note. A counsel for defendant stated that completely reasonable for the Commission to rely on activity before the case ever started. Well, that's really tantamount to saying we don't even have to have these reviews. I can always rely on activity before the investigation. It's called investigation period, before the anti-dumping duty order was imposed. The reason the law says we have to have reviews is precisely to analyze whether something has happened in the last 5 years to cause the commission to reevaluate the need for anti-dumping duties going forward. Well, something happened in this case with respect to BlueScope. They invested billions of dollars to create hot rolled steel production. We submit that was given and was unfortunately essentially ignored by the commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Holstein.
Yes. With respect to this veto authority issue, I want to be clear that the commission did find that it had veto authority. Absolutely. But the commission also found that it wouldn't exercise it, that the executive of BlueScope North America wouldn't exercise that authority unless the overall objectives in the U.S. market were threatened. That's what he said in his signed declaration that he submitted after the hearing. So the commission did not believe that he had the veto authority. I mean, that really wasn't the issue, Your Honor. It was what the incentives for BlueScope were after, if the order were revoked. And there was plenty of evidence that they would sell to unaffiliated customers. With respect to the expansion and the effective time of the expansion for North Star and Nippon Steel, Your Honor, both of those were after the period of review. That was clear. We explained that at some length in our brief. They weren't effective during the period of review. Neither of them were. I think your question sort of implies that both were in the future. With respect to the issue of considering the investment, the commission considered the investment because it was raised by BlueScope. It was probably half their brief to the commission was about all their investments in the U.S. market and in North Star and how things had changed. So the commission, of course, addressed it in its views. Investment is not always relevant. Very often there's investment in domestic producers by foreign producers. That's a common condition of competition. In the cold roll reviews you just looked at, there were domestic producers owned by foreign producers as well. It's not uncommon, and usually it's not an issue, Your Honor. With respect to the significance of the investment, I mean, a lot of it, as we noted, wasn't in hot rolled capacity. It was in downstream products that would use hot rolled. They acknowledged that in different coating products that required hot rolled. So if anything, some of that investment indicated that they would be more likely to ship to the United States, as well as this argument they've made about how profitable the U.S. market is. They argued that North Star was extremely profitable on their sales in the U.S. market, and that really only shows that BlueScope would be interested in also selling in the U.S. market. One other point, Your Honor, with respect to the selection of factors that you mentioned in your questioning about the wide latitude the commission has, the commission doesn't have to use the same factors in every sunset review. That's in Allegheny Ludlum and in the recent decision. That's the whole point of having wide latitude. It selects the factors based on the specific facts of each sunset review. And
so wide latitude means that there can never be a practice.
It would mean that there's, I wouldn't say that it could never be a practice, but certainly an investment would not be a practice. Not considered in every sunset review. Most of the time, the commission rejects it. The commission did address it in these sunset reviews because it was the focus of BlueScope's argument. And one other request, Your Honor. We'd like to be able to respond to Blue Scope's submission because they're alleging that I've misrepresented the record. So we'd like to be able to respond a few days afterwards, if that's possible, Your Honor.
I will rule on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Ms. Thorson.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. Just to reiterate what Mr. Heldenstein was saying, I don't think Mr. Porter's characterization of the Commission's counsel as having made misstatements is particularly accurate. The record evidence regarding Mr. Finan's testimony and his veto power, again, is more complex than Blue Scope would have you believe. And I point you to pages 31 and 32 of our response brief where we discuss this, also to the hearing transcript at tab 11 of the joint appendix at pages 273 through 278, exhibit 1 of Blue Scope's post-hearing brief at JA tab 12. And in any event, the salient issue would not seem to be so much whether veto power exists as whether there's a reason to exercise it. And the Commission reasonably found here that Blue Scope had reason and incentive to increase its U.S. shipments and could do so without harming North Star. And finally, with respect to the question about whether there can ever be a Commission practice, I think there can be. But again, the nature of the beast here, the nature of the decisions that the Commission is tasked with, make it quite distinct from, for example, the Commerce Department, where it continuously, formulaically, locksteply looks at indirect selling expenses over and over again the same way every time in multiple cases. And someone can say, well, you do this all the time. Here's 17 cases exactly like mine. Why didn't you do it here? The facts vary so much between these commission cases that it is more difficult, I would say, just by the nature of the inquiry for practices of the formulaic lockstep type to develop. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. That concludes our arguments. The plaintiffs have requested that the deadline for post-argument submissions be adjusted in light of your request that a transcript of the argument be prepared. I will, grant that. You have a sense of how long it will take for the transcript to be prepared?
Your Honor, we think they make the request.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a sense.
Okay. I'm sorry?
We think they request a transcript. I don't remember what the practice of the court is in terms of how quickly a transcript is
prepared. Right. Now, the argument, by the way, is going to be available as audio. So you can listen to the argument as well.
That works fine, Your Honor. So whichever is earliest, I'm fine.
Okay. So I think listening to the argument would be, which would be on the website, would be the quickest.
Okay. You get that posted today.
It can be posted today.
Then we can, if it's posted today, we can keep the original schedule, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. I will hold in abeyance the request of any further briefing on the briefing that the ITC has made regarding response to your characterizations. We'll see what the filings look like. But I'm inclined to try to keep moving this case forward. I'd like to thank counsel for your enlightening arguments, it's a pleasure to be back in the courthouse again, and safe travels, and till next time. That doesn't mean till next time on this case, but you never know, right? Thank you.
All right. Court stands adjourned.